For my final conference, I would like to talk about the role of business and business people in the free society. I do this because I think, in many respects, in our modern society, we're very sensitive to minorities, and I think rightly so. Anytime anyone makes a crude remark about a person's ethnic origin or is somehow insensitive to minorities, we rightly become upset. But the one group of people, and this may not be so much the case, I would hope not so much the case in Switzerland as in other parts of Europe and even in the United States, the one group of people who can be attacked without any redress, who can be attacked with impunity, are business people. One need only think about the way in which business people are portrayed in the media to see the prejudice that exists against business people. And this is the case especially among religious leaders. Religious leaders seem to have the idea that the world of wealth is like a pie. And that if someone has one large piece of the pie and another person has a smaller piece of the pie, that the problem is that somebody has taken the pieces of the pie away from those who have small pieces. This is what is called in economics a zero-sum game. And this is part of the perspective that people have when they preach against wealth. Now, it is true that in the scriptures, people are warned about wealth in terms of what they do with it. But it is not true that either in moral theology or in the scriptures, that it's simply the existence of having resources that is a moral problem. The scriptures do not say that money is the source of all evil. It says that an inordinate attachment to money or the love of money is the root of all evil. So let's kind of go back to the beginning, and I want to touch again just lightly on some of the themes that I've already established, so that we see that in a Judeo-Christian worldview, the role of the business person is something that should be seen as a calling or a vocation rather than as the evidence of the existence of sin. In this regard, I go back to the cosmology and anthropology that we find in the book of Genesis. The fact that the God who creates the heavens and the earth creates them good. So the material world is good. Man is placed in the context of a material world. The human person has a physical body that needs to have food, and in order to have food, you have to have systems of production to be able to consume that food, to be able to build houses or produce clothing or build shelters in which to live. And so all of this implies some type of enterprise that must be engaged in, and that this enterprise, this engagement with the material world, is not seen as something that is evil because the world itself, the physical world itself, in the book of Genesis, comes from God, who says that the material world is good. It is good because it emerges from him in the first place. It is created ex nihilo, from nothing. And that the human person is a composite of both the material, the physical, and the spiritual. So, in this cosmology, in this anthropology, the human person endowed with this creativity is suited to the world in which he is situated and is given a vocation. The word vocation, vocare, means to call. The human race is called to be in the image of God as the custodian, as the steward of creation. And in fact, the first words in the book of Genesis spoken to the human family is to multiply and to have dominion over the whole world. So in a sense, this vocation is a call to be enterprising, if you will. Now, we associate the word enterprising in a very different historical period than the one that I'm placing it in now, but my point is that from the beginning, the engagement with the material world was not seen to be a bad thing. And in fact, this notion is reiterated throughout the scriptures with the view, for instance, the parables that Jesus has of the good stewards, or the stewards that are entrusted with the master's wealth. You remember that one is given 10, one is given 5, one is given 1, and the master says, be industrious with these. The master goes away, and the one produces 100, another 50, and the other one, who had the one, buries his talent and produces nothing because he is afraid. And this is the one who is condemned, the one who is creative, who was trusting, who was willing to risk, was praised. The one who was afraid of the master was the one who was condemned. These images that emerge from the Judeo-Christian sense, both in the creation and in the parables, are a real challenge to many modern notions offered sometimes by clergy, sometimes by professors, certainly in the popular media as a whole. The notion that the more a person creates, the more they have exploited another person. To think that wealth creation is axiomatically exploitative is to buy into this zero-sum game. Remember that the zero-sum game says that the world of wealth is limited, is static. So that if one has a larger part and someone else has a smaller part, that can only be accounted for by the fact that the one who has the larger part is taking it away from the one who has the smaller part. But that is a fallacy. That is not true. There's another way of looking at the world of wealth. And actually, it's kind of the image that you see in the book of Genesis, that God creates the heavens and the earth so that the human person can create. In other words, rather than dividing up the pie, what if we make the pie bigger so that more and more people can have an opportunity to participate in this creativity? The responsibility for doing that falls to the business person. I said in my previous lecture that wealth does not exist in a state of nature. Let me elaborate that point here. Many people think that because there is a great deal of natural resources in a given country, that people are wealthy. But let's remember that probably one of the, certainly at this moment that I'm giving this lecture here in Lugano, in 2008, there is a great deal of money being spent on oil. The price of oil is going higher. So people think that, well, see, anyone who has oil would be rich. But that hasn't always been the case, has it? Most of human history didn't see that. For most of human history, oil was considered to be an annoyance. It wasn't a resource. What is it? And this is a very important question, because if you get the answer to this question right, you can understand so much more about enterprise, about business, about the role of entrepreneurship. What is it that transformed petroleum, oil, from a natural resource into wealth? It was the human mind. It was the invention of the combustion engine. It transformed the oceans of oil that existed under the Middle East from being an annoyance. When you would step in it, it would be difficult to get off, into being what we call today black gold. It was the human inventiveness that transforms petroleum into energy that places it at human service. Wealth is only created when it is placed at human service. The wealth that a person has in free exchange, I know that you could rob somebody on a street and become wealthy if you steal enough money from them, but that's not the kind of wealth creation I'm talking about. That is, in fact, exploitation. But the kind of free exchange that enables one to become wealthy comes through human service. A person cannot be wealthy in a market system as a market system unless one has offered something of value to another person. In this sense, economics speaks to us of subjective value. Now, it is true, from a theological, moral point of view, not all value is subjective. There are some objective values that exist by virtue of the nature of reality. But the subjective values that become realized in a market economy are those values that people bring to the marketplace when they have needs for themselves and for others. And so they will purchase a good or a service that is offered by the person who has invented or in some way made themselves available to offer this good or service. The entrepreneur plays a particular role in this whole progressive economy to the extent that the entrepreneur is a kind of empresario, one who sees the various needs that exist in a culture and can bring together human cooperation in such a way as to produce the answer to those needs that people have. Israel Kirzner, who is an economist in the United States, refers to this as the discovery process, that what the entrepreneur does is really discover things that other people have overlooked, like the first person to discover that oil could be transformed into petroleum, could be transformed into fuel, could be transformed into propelling automobiles or buses in one way or another to serve human beings. Another similar revolution is going on right now as we speak. In fact, your ability to watch this is the result of this, with an even more common substance than petroleum, and that is sand, silicone. The whole technological revolution related to communications that is going on, every cell phone, all of our computer technology and email is all predicated on silicone, on sand, and is the ability of inventors to have discovered the use for silicone to transmit data in the way that is far beyond my own capacity to understand, but nonetheless has served the needs that you and I have to communicate with one another, to communicate with our families. Now, this process of entrepreneurship, this process of business, has to be guided by some kind of moral orientation. The reason I say this is because of the simple moral maxim that I think almost anyone in civilized society would agree with, and that is this is the moral maxim, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. So we have to be guided by some kind of moral norm that prevents technology from ruling us, where we stay in control of the technology. Not everything that one can do in a market is necessarily good. Not everything that you and I consume is good for us. Not everything we can sell, but is good for people. And certainly not the whole world cannot be benefited by the fact that simply because things are available on a market that they're necessarily good. But sometimes things are good for one people that are bad for another. And more often than not, the best person to determine that is me, myself. I have to determine what limits I have on the food that I consume, or the alcohol that I consume, or the speed with which I drive. So that enterprise needs to be placed in a broader juridical, legal context, and in an even broader moral context, so that we understand enterprise to serve the common good. In Catholic social doctrine, we say that private property must always be placed at the disposal of the universal destination. What we mean by that is not the collectivization or socialization of private property, but private property that addresses itself to the needs of people in their particular circumstances. I happen to think that private property protected by law can better do this than socialized property or political property. And my reason for believing this is just simply to observe the history of the past century, where property was conserved, rather where property was socialized and really not placed at human service. I'm thinking, of course, of the Soviet Union or experiments with national socialism and corporatism and various economic systems that approximated the control of and the decision making by bureaucrats and politicians over the lives and economic decision making of others. So let me conclude by summing this up and saying this, that entrepreneurship is a responsibility. Entrepreneurship can be a vocation from God. This is not to say that because one has the vocation to be creative and industrious, that one can do anything one wants. In fact, with the great talents that God places at the disposal of a business person come great responsibilities, awesome moral responsibilities. Very often associated with business is the notion of greed. And of course, let me just say that greed can exist in any economic system. Poor people can be greedy, rich people can be greedy. So the notion of greed is not intrinsically associated with economic productivity, even though in the popular mindset it often is. But the fact is that God has entrusted to people talents, which he expects them to be creative with, productive with, generous with, and industrious with. And my hope is that those who are creative and productive, industrious, will understand that these are gifts that have been entrusted to them for the common good. And that one day, we will all stand before the judgment seat of God, who will ask us what we have done with the talents he's entrusted to us. And I certainly hope we hear him say to us what he said to the servants in Matthew's gospel. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have proven yourself faithful in small things. Enter now into your master's joy. Thank you very much.